Thank you so much. How has everybody's weekend been? All right. Glad to hear that. We have Will McCaskill back with us momentarily, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick 2 minutes and watch a video of everything that's happened this weekend. Take a look.
We need to change the incentives if we want more widespread change, and that means encouraging funders to require the research to be open.
The goal of evidence-based policy is to use evidence where it exists and to build it where it doesn't.
I would encourage those who are interested in learning more about policy to consider coming to DC and spending a year or two inside the machinery and learning and contributing to that process, and then going back to your community and sharing those lessons.
Developing some new technology which is smarter than us would dethrone us from our only advantage over the other species. We would, you know, we would need to align the values of these systems with ours or control them or something, otherwise they would be controlling us.
If you meet someone who's just encountered effective altruism, you can help them figure out their path. You can help them find the best action that they can take given their skills and experience.
I think of it as being a dirty secret of effective altruism, that it's hard. My view is that the qualities of effective altruism that make it hard also provide a rich source of opportunity.
Making connections between academic research and the actual work that people are doing on the ground is something that has been relatively neglected. Being here at this conference, you have a really good opportunity to not neglect that. So don't.
Government seems very large, but at the end of the day, it's not buildings that do things, it's people who do things. A single individual who is hardworking and intrinsically motivated can get an amazing amount of stuff done.
So, we will close EA Global 2016 in the same way that we opened it, with a word from the Center for Effective Altruism CEO, Will McCaskill. As you know, he is the world's youngest tenured professor of philosophy at Lincoln College at Oxford University. Please welcome, with a big round of applause, one final time, Will McCaskill.
Hello, EA Global. Have you had a good time? Good, correct answer. So it's an absolute honor to be back on stage and to be able to give the closing speech. I've just had an absolutely incredible time. I've really just been blown away by the quality of all the people here, the conversations I've had, and so on. And this topic and talk, I'm going to talk a little bit about, well, what next? We've talked about past, present, potential future, but what the kind of action points and priorities for the next year. And in terms of just, you know, linking with Toby's talk and what he said, and just how I'm blown away I've been today, it got me, some of the things Toby said did get me a bit nostalgic about some of the things I used to think. I remember in 2009, he mentioned, oh, maybe one day, giving what we can, might want to hire a secretary, and I just thought that was just this ludicrous idea that it would ever be at the stage that we'd want to do that. He also talked about the office that we were in, this really lovely thing in Exeter College, overlooking the balcony, really scenic. He neglected the office that we were in immediately after that, which I referred to as the dungeon for a while. So you can't see it here, but this was actually in the back of an estate agent. So in order to get there, you had to go to this estate agent, Hutton Parker, walk through while like everyone's just working on their laptops, kind of stroll past, down the stairs. This was the one room with any natural light. Everything else was just like absolutely dingy, kind of mold in the walls. I remember one of our major donors at the time kind of turning up, and everyone's crammed in because it's so small. We had so many people at the time. And he comes in and just asks, is this legal? We also almost got thrown out because I was caught having a nap next to the bathrooms. So we've definitely kind of, things have become a little bit more professional since then. Yeah, now we're at the stage where it looks much more like this. So this was a quote from Rachel Atchison on Facebook. Obviously, you know, we're aiming to do good. It's not just about nerds, but it is definitely nerd heaven. And I like that the photo she used also has the presentation as like this white light in the, you know, it's like literally the voice of God sort of thing. So yeah, someone gave an amen in the previous talk, and I wonder if this is, yeah, amen, hallelujah to effective altruism. Please never say that. Okay, cool. I should get on with my talk. I've forgotten what I was going to say. So, okay, cool. So now we're at the stage. It's like really pretty exciting. The last 2 days have been absolutely amazing. I mean, I've seen so many cool bits of progress. So people who are very new to effective altruism, especially talked to a couple of people who are going to get into philanthropy in quite a big way. They have, you know, family foundations, perhaps, and are just, you know, they've talked to a bunch of people, but now they're like, finally, I've actually met people in this space who are thinking about things in the right way. I've talked to people who are engaged in career choice and potentially making quite significant changes to their plans in the light of the kind of big updates that we've had over the past year. There's been great examples of, you know, the opportunity for this network to bear fruit as well. So there was one person who'd she'd been meaning to reach out to Google Brain for like months and months now and still kind of hadn't gotten around to it. So the person she was talking to said, oh, well, yeah, I'll mention that to you know, Chris Ola, he's here, and apparently was just like searching for her for the rest of the conference. So that kind of proactive networking has been incredibly valuable as well, I think. It's also just been really great seeing like the sort of developments in other countries as well, so getting to talk to people setting up effective altruism groups in places like France and places like India. That's, you know, really exciting as well. And the best thing as well was some of the people I've met with who've kind of accosted me and then said, I really want to talk to you about some fundamental mistakes that the effective altruism community is making. And I've been like, great, amazing, hit me. That's actually been some of the best stuff. So over and over again, I think there's just been amazing stories of people who, you know, getting a lot of value. Certainly I've gotten a lot of value out of this conference. And so this is the question, is what next? And so when I talked in the opening about, you know, the growth that we've been on, this kind of exponential trajectory, you'd be kind of forgiven for thinking like, oh, well, this is what the future of effective altruism is. It's this exponential that kind of goes on forever. But of course, that just can't be the case. For the start, there's a finite number of people in the world. There's a finite amount of resources in the observable universe. At some point, this will have to stop. And so, you know, it's kind of no slight at all that the curve is going to have to look like this. So at some point, effective altruism will reach the kind of plateau in terms of the amount of value that it will be kind of generating for the world. And when you think about these things in these terms, in terms of this long time scale, it should become kind of apparent that actually what the most important thing in terms of the effective altruism community and this idea isn't really the rate of growth. It's how high that plateau gets. And there's certain ways in which I think, you know, certain real risks that could mean that plateau doesn't get as high as it could be. So one idea, certainly like dilution or co-option of the idea, where you could easily imagine a world where effective altruism as a term becomes this hot thing, this fashionable idea, it becomes cool. And so suddenly everyone wants to start saying that, oh, they're engaged in effective altruism because that's a way of potentially getting funding or so on, even though they're not actually changing their behavior or really thinking things through in terms of how they're having a big impact. Instead, they may be making kind of nods to data and so on. And I think there's other risks too. And so I think when we think about, you know, what are the big things that we should be trying to focus on as a community, especially over the next year, it's on the framing I think we should have is, how can we ensure that over the long run, this kind of peak value that the effective altruism community might be able to create is as high as possible? And I think there's a few things that I particularly like to highlight in terms of that. Obviously, as a caveat, this is all just my view. Like, everyone should think about this for their own, because it's a really important issue. But this is kind of what I think of as a few of the top things to kind of bear in mind and to kind of ensure that we keep in our forefront of our minds as we kind of engage with effective altruism as an idea and a community. So first is just protecting the key idea. So this is in terms of the risk of the idea getting corrupted or diluted in some way once it starts to interact with other communities. And so ensuring that the key concept of effective altruism kind of is retained, which is just using evidence and reason to address the question, how can I help others by as much as possible? And it's pretty notable that often when you interact with people, so in my interactions with the media, often with academics as well, that's often not the understanding that people have of the effective altruism community. Instead, people often think, well, effective altruism is about earning to give to donate to RCT-backed charities, and we don't think about anything else other than that. Which is kind of like, yeah, would be like a remarkably narrow thing to believe. But when you interact with the media, for example, their incentives are to make ideas as simplistic, as controversial as possible, because their incentives aren't the same as ours. Similarly with, you know, academia as well, incentives aren't often that great. It can be to, you know, phrase things in ways that are juicy to attack or are going to, you know, help with the kind of intellectual project you're already on rather than necessarily representing things in all their complexity. So I think, you know, striving a lot to, at a high level, kind of protect those key ideas. And then also the values that embody that as well, where I think there's really three core values to effective altruism as we tend to practice it. One is moral commitment, the fact that, you know, we really care very deeply about the plight of others. We're willing to do things that are kind of unusual, like earning to give or like other paths that aren't the kind of norm necessarily for how people act, because we really care about helping others by as much as possible. We're very willing to change our minds because we realize these things are really important. We've actually got to get the right answer. And sometimes, for some of us, you know, willing to make large financial or sacrifices or sacrifice in terms of our time. Second, of course, is epistemic humility, the fact that, you know, the guiding thought behind effective altruism is we just don't know what works. We're constantly questioning ourselves, being self-critical, trying to understand opposing points of view, taking the scientific methodology, which is this constant questioning, constant learning, and often in a kind of generally Bayesian way where you're just, it's not a matter of like, I believe this or I don't believe this, but instead just gradients of degrees of belief that you're trying to improve or get a little bit better, get a little bit worse. And then the final thing of what I call active excitement, so the fact that we're really an action-oriented community. I mean, people always comment when they introduce me, I'm a philosopher who's actually doing something, and that was exactly how my, you know, my impression when I first met Toby is too. But both, it's about actually taking these ideas that are really important and applying them to the real world. And not just that, but actually just thinking, this is an amazing way to live. This is an incredibly exciting way to live. It might well be the case that you think, yeah, well, it is also a moral duty, but that doesn't also prevent it from being just, you know, something that you can be really excited about as a way to live your life. And as I kind of hinted at earlier, I think that means one thing we might want to do, I certainly feel this for myself, is be careful kind of with interactions with the media, because their incentives are quite different. And I definitely feel personally like I've grappled with this and then repeatedly failed in my attempts to avoid these sort of errors. So one example being I was talking with a newspaper and about kind of 80,000 hours and career choice and so on, and you know, every 5 minutes would re-emphasize that we think there's a really wide range of careers where you can do a lot of good, and here's the framework for how we think about it, and it's definitely not about earning to give. And then this is the kind of title that comes up with, which is, you know, I don't read German, but my guess is that it's not the most nuanced of discussions of career choice. In fact, it says, you know, want to improve the world, become a banker. And then it has a photo of Alex Foster, who, yep, he worked in banking very briefly, and then he quit to become an entrepreneur because he thought he could do more good. But that's still not the kind of sexy, simplified idea of what effective altruism is. A second really important idea, I think, as we start to grow, is taking externalities very seriously as well of our actions. And that's a way that I think, definitely in my own case, as we grow, this is going to become more and more important. Now it's the case that it's not just an individual making a decision, but it's like the impacts on the whole community as well. And so that, I think, has a whole range of implications in terms of basically how we do cost-benefit calculations for the sorts of things we might do. So one is just that, so there's kind of negative aspects and positive aspects to this. One is in terms of, you know, anything bad you do kind of reputationally now, it seems like people just treat effective altruism community often as this kind of completely homogenous whole, just so if they have one bad interaction with the community, then that just kind of means absolutely everyone feels the same, which is obviously a bad inference for people to draw, but it can happen. Second more subtle thing is like you get these problems that are classic coordination problems, unilateralist dilemmas and prisoner's dilemmas. So where, I'm sure most of you know a prisoner's dilemma, but classic case is where individually rational action leads to socially bad outcomes. So a classic case might be climate change or something. It might be in every country's self-interest that, you know, the best outcome for everyone would be if everyone could agree on a certain treaty for climate change. But if it's even better for every country if all the other countries agree on a treaty for climate change and then personally opt out and free ride. And then you get these unfortunate circumstances where that means everyone chooses to free ride and you don't get cooperation. And everyone is worse off than they could be. As the community grows, you start to get similar dynamics as well. So Kerry, in his talk earlier today, that some of you might have attended, pointed this out, that this happens with donor coordination as well, that many donors might also all think, well, you know, I really want to fund this charity, but I know other people might be interested as well, and so I want to ensure that I'm, like, really having the marginal impact, that I'm kind of the donor of last resort, as it were, the person that I know wouldn't otherwise donate. But then if you get everyone thinking about that, then you just end up kind of increasing the transaction costs. So you just mean that, like, everyone's kind of waiting until the last possible moment and then kind of has to dive in. Whereas, you know, what we'd want to do is create a culture, perhaps, where people are just immediately going to cooperate with different potential donors and kind of see what we're doing as a collective enterprise. A similar thing is the unilateralist dilemma as well, which the idea here is there might be some difficult weighing or judgment that you have to make between sort of kind of different parameters, and lots of different people among a community might disagree on how to weigh those two things. So another kind of climate change-oriented example to illustrate the concept in general is with respect to geoengineering. So perhaps almost all countries in the world think that the cost-benefit for geoengineering just isn't going to be high enough. It's going to be too risky, and the benefits aren't going to be high enough. But it's a difficult thing to do, so there's going to be a bell curve in terms of how people weigh those two, the benefits against the costs. Then it's just probably going to be the case that, like, one country will think, yeah, actually, this is worth it. In which case, then, even though most people have kind of assessed that it's not a good thing to do, it'll still definitely happen. And that's, again, this kind of classic problem for coordination or group action, as compared, which is different from individual action. And apparently the solution is just to, like, imagine everyone voting and then take the median vote in terms of how you weigh these two parameters. But the general idea is just accepting that kind of other people have different views, and sometimes you can be like an outlier in terms of how you weigh different things. So another example there might be, in my own case, kind of wanting to go with a very, you know, like, maybe you have some idea that you want to present in quite a controversial way, but if you're an outlier and other people think, no, the benefits there aren't worth the costs, then it's become super important in terms of collective rationality to be taking into account other people, how other people weigh those costs versus benefits. And even if it seems to you like it's a good trade-off, if other people are disagreeing, it suggests that you ought to kind of update on that and take that disagreement into account and then perhaps not act. I mean, a similar thing as well is with respect to, often these things kind of relate to extremism or wanting to respect or do things that may be like more problematic according to kind of common sense kind of morality. And, you know, obviously, like, lots of people in the community are consequentialists, so that can seem like a really good trade-off to make. But as we grow, I think more and more people are going to start to kind of look for flaws within effective altruism or things to criticize. And so I think the kind of approach should be, even for people whose value systems or approaches we agree with, the approach should be, well, how can we engage in moral trade? What are the things that other people really care about that we don't as much? And I think a certain amount of things like respecting, respecting kind of common sense ethical prohibitions, those are the sort of things that even for consequentialists, they think, yeah, it's generally pretty good. Maybe I don't care as much as non-consequentialists do, but in terms of practical impact, extremely important if you're trying to cooperate with other groups for which this is very important indeed. So those are the ways in which, as the community grows, there's kind of risks of doing things that can have bad effects. But there's a flip side as well. There's positive externalities as well. In fact, huge numbers. And that, again, can change the kind of cost-benefit ratio of, or the kind of analysis from how you'd look at things on an individual matter to how you look at things as a collective. So one thing is just doing outstanding first-order work becomes even better than it was before. Because now it's not only the case that you're having this amazing direct impact, but it's also the case that you're kind of showing the power of effective altruism as a community and as a movement. So, you know, in my first talk, I mentioned a couple of these amazing organizations that have been set up and coming out of effective altruism. So WAVE, the remittances company that's already one of the leading remittance companies in the US. Charity Science Health, which is doing the SMS immunization reminders in India, where, you know, I just think it's this amazingly powerful story in terms of the power of the ideas that you can have a couple of friends who are at university in Canada, and they drop out, and they just try a whole bunch of different things, do amazing literature review in order to find, okay, this is a gap of something that can be incredibly effective, and then just go out to India to work out how this will work, and then just set up what has the potential to be an incredibly effective organization. So that's obviously like got the potential, still early days, but got the potential to do a huge amount of good directly, but also has a significant additional benefit in terms of just showing, yeah, this is like the power of these ideas, the power of this community. Similarly as well, when it comes to the kind of information value you get from trying different things, it might be the case that pursuing careers that are just kind of neglected within the community, so there aren't that many people who are, very knowledgeable about history, let's say, or anthropology or something, and you might think that paths in that area just would seem, if you were just looking at it in another way, to be less effective than everything else. But when you come to the informational value as well, the fact that you can go and explore an area, whether that's career or whether that's through donations, explore an area of the world, and you can kind of write this up and go and tell the rest of the community, blog about it. And then, you've got the value of information as well. Similarly, in terms of the sort of network effects that, again, Kerry talked about a little bit now, if you could kind of create a new opportunity, a new piece of knowledge, or a new contact, this is now, in some sense, kind of a good that can be shared among the community. And that's a way in which, as we grow, the kind of opportunities we get or the things we improve upon have even more value the more we grow. So that's the case of externalities as well. And then the third thing, I think, and again, this is tying into the theme of the conference, is the most important thing is, again, keeping the kind of effective altruism a vibrant intellectual community. Because you can very much imagine that, the way that we, that peak could not be as high as it was is if we do get kind of set on a certain bunch of cause areas or we do get set on a certain bunch of presuppositions. And so I think the absolutely crucial thing as we grow over the next year and over the years to come is to have this concept of effective altruism as an intellectual community, to be able to update, to get new arguments, to take those arguments and ideas very seriously. And so that means, I think, in terms of things you can be doing over the next year, thinking about reading and discussing the most important effective altruist issues, absolutely crucial. Writing about your ideas and engaging critically with content from effective altruist organizations. Be constructive and productive as well, but the absolute core of effective altruism, which I know I've said many times now and throughout it's been the theme of the conference, is this constant self-reflection, this constant learning, because that's how we're going to be able to do the most good in the long run. And so those are some of the things that I think we should kind of bear in mind and you know, think of as things that we can think of as priority areas over the coming year and perhaps beyond. But now the question is, well, what to do right now, what to do tomorrow, and so on. And so here I'm going to suggest a few action points. So one is that I bet you've all met a ton of people, like absolutely new people. So one thing to do in terms of continuing your engagement, ensuring that the benefit you get isn't limited just to these next 2 days, is schedule a meeting with a new acquaintance. And so in order to ensure that you know, delayed benefits and so on don't bias you, I'd encourage you just do that right now. So I'm going to pause for a minute and just someone that you've met who you think is cool, just if you take out your smartphones, actually email them just now. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I guess I should do it as well. Darren, are you coming to Jupiter? Okay, let's get a beer. Okay, from the noise dying down a little bit. Second big action. So in terms of kind of, you know, ensuring we live up to our values and so on, one of the kind of clearest signals I think we can make in terms of the commitment of effective altruism to doing good is saying, yeah, well, we put our money where our mouths are. You know, even if you're thinking the main aim, benefit of impact of your life is going to be through means other than money, it's still just the clearest, most concrete signal that I know of in terms of showing just how commit, like, how seriously you can take these ideas. And so at the same time, like, strongly don't want people to feel peer pressured by being in a massive audience. But if it's the case that you've been thinking about, okay, giving what we can pledge, 10% lifetime pledge, if you're still a student, it's just 1% of what you're living on until you actually start taking an income, then very easy to sign up, givingwhatwecan.org/join. Second action, I'm going to give you a minute to do it. Really encourage you to go on the website if you've been thinking, yeah, this is something I should do. Again, no time like the present, can do it just now. That's really nice to see so many people like on their phones. Okay, well, you can keep doing that, but then, as you might have guessed from the slide, third action point, which I'm encouraging everyone to do, is then, I'm hoping a lot of you are feeling pretty excited, you've got a lot of new ideas. Then I think, like, again, no time like the present. Turn that into a concrete plan. Again, it's just very easy to go back to kind of normal life where you're not necessarily surrounded by as many people who are so like-minded. But instead, think, okay, what are the things I can do in terms of the plans that I've come up with over this weekend, how can I turn that into action? And maybe come up with a plan of action points, and I'm going to set reminders for myself to what am I going to do in the next day, in the next week, in the next month, 3 months, 6 months, year. And again, that's something I think just, you know, do it right now. Go on your phones, make that plan. I'll give you one more minute to Okay, terrific. Okay, that's the end of me being the teacher telling you to do loads of homework. Okay, terrific. Well, that's us coming to the end of the conference. We'll have some logistics coming up, but it's been the most amazing couple of days, I think, of the whole last year since perhaps last Effective Altruism Global, and I dare to say even including that. And so I've had the most amazing time. I think I've learned a lot. I've met an astonishing number of cool people, and I'm really excited by what the year to come has to hold. So I think, yeah, let's just keep in mind with the next year kind of three big things, I think. One is just living up to and protecting the core effective altruism values, thinking moral commitment, epistemic humility, and this active incitement where we think about how to do good and actually do it. Second is keeping effective altruism as a vibrant intellectual community. This amazing project of just how can we actually figure out what the most impactful things we can do are. And then finally, I think, let's just go out there and just do a fuck ton of good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Will. A few closing orders of business here. First of all, we do have one more thing we want you to do on your phones before we get too far away, and that is to take our closing survey, which is just going to take a couple of minutes. It's so easy. We're going to do it now. I'm going to do it at the podium. It is at eaglobal.org/closing. So it's EA Global. I am talked out. I can't talk anymore. eaglobal.org/closing. This is one discipline group. I'm on question five. Question six is a doozy. That's funny. right, so I finished mine. I'll give you another minute or two to finish yours. Meanwhile, CEA staff and EA Global volunteers, if you could make your way to the side of the stage here, we're going to ask you all to come on stage in just a second. So if you have been invited but have not made your way over to stage left here, please do so now. All right, so as you're wrapping that up, a lot of people to thank. Obviously, this has been a great weekend, and it took a lot of work and effort from a lot of people to make it all possible. So we're going to bring out a few people who created this event and then everybody who helped bring it together this weekend. First, I'd like to welcome Amy LeBenz, your curator and executive producer. Round of applause for Amy. Your director of programming, Oliver Habrika. The entire CEA staff that chipped in over the last few months to make this possible, come on out, guys. Round of applause for the full CEA staff. Here we go. All right, awesome. Yes, all the volunteers next, the volunteers who helped pull this weekend together. Come on out, guys. You've seen them all weekend. Thank you for all your work. An event like this does not come together without the hard work of a lot of volunteers. To all of our speakers, our panelists, those who gave conferences, workshops, everything that happened in the program throughout the weekend, thank you to you all for your contributions as well. And finally, a huge thank you to all of you, the attendees. Without you, of course, this would not have been possible, so give a round of applause to yourselves for coming and for all that you contributed. Okay, just a couple of closing logistics. We have, first of all, a group photo coming up immediately next. We want to get everybody into one giant group photo. To do that, we're going to cross the plaza right outside the auditorium. We're going to go to the left of the building that contains the Pauley Ballroom, and we're going to kind of find some stairs over there where everybody can get together, and I'm told that the sunset is going to light it beautifully, and it's going to be great. So remember, and there will be volunteers guiding the way, so it's out across the plaza and then to the left of the big building where you've been at various times this weekend. So we'll have a group photo immediately after we break from here. Tonight, we have the Pauley Ballroom until 10 o'clock, so everybody is invited to come mix and mingle there until 10. And then after that, We will be at Jupiter for an after party, and the address is right on the screen at 2181 Shattuck Avenue, not far from here. So, thank you all again, those who organized, those who volunteered, those who attended, those who contributed. This has been an incredible success. EA Global 2016, everybody. One last time, a huge round of applause. Thank you very much.